This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic. Today, friends of the show, Michael Jackson and Ryan Florence join us to talk about Remix, a killer React framework from the creators of React Router. This is a two-part conversation. Today, we dive into the technical challenges of building a React framework and why the now ancient ideas found in Turbolinks and Pjax could be the key to high-performance, server-side, rendered, and generated React apps. First, a big thanks to this week's sponsor, Infinite Red. Do you bang your head against your keyboard thinking, this would be a whole lot easier if I could just work with someone on the React or React Native core teams? I definitely do. Having that access to developers that know React inside and out and know the direction the library is headed has been a force multiplier for my work. If you don't have that, you need to find it. And I recommend starting with Infinite Red. Infinite Red are core contributors to React Native and have expert React experience. They've been designing, building, and shipping apps for 10 years and want to help you navigate the hardest parts. They have a pretty sweet deal going right now where you get $750 for referring a new project. So if you know a team in need, this is a good time for you. Get expert help today at reactpodcast.infinite.red. And now into the show. Michael and Ryan, welcome to React Podcast.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Thanks.
I'm realizing just now that I've never had to like invite, or maybe one time before, invited two people to the podcast, and it felt awkward. So thanks for giving me that.
Well, when you're kind of lacking, you know, in star power, you got to invite two people, kind of make up for the, you know, the lack of illumination.
Well, this will be a fun experiment. I've not done this in a while, so we'll kind of like feel this out as we go through. But y'all are announcing this really cool project, and I just wanted to get you both on to talk about it, kind of answer some of the questions that I had, some of the interest and intrigue around the project, and see what's going on. So tell me a little bit about Remix, just the high level, and then we'll kind of like dive in from there.
Yeah, so as you know, Michael and I have been doing React for like almost since the beginning. Yeah. And the two of us have been working together for 5 years, traveling the world, hotel room. I've had more sleepovers with Michael than anyone else in my life. And
P90X3.
We've done P90X3 together at hotel rooms across the world.
You've had multiple seasons of P90X together, yep. Like different workouts.
But anyway, so like we've spent a lot of time together, and we built React Router together, and React Router was always just like the core of what we really wanted to build, and that's Remix, which would be a framework on top of React, on top of the ideas of React Router, on how we think you can deliver really great dynamic user experiences without having to like goof around with, you know, all the DevOps, I guess, quote, part of JavaScript app development. Like just throw some files in a folder, create some React components and say Remix run, and then it'll just do everything else for you. A framework built on top of React and React Router with data loading and code splitting and just all that kind of stuff. The kind of like the core app framework that you would want to build a high performance and interactive and dynamic React application.
Interesting. Now, I know that there's a lot of, I guess, different philosophies in the space of like React framework, right? Like you have Next, yep. Which is kind of like popularized this idea of like a file system based framework. You got Create React App, which is kind of the, you know, Facebook's way of like building or an idea of like how you would like build a React app. You have Gatsby, which is like a full on like content management cyborg thing that kind of just happens to use React. And so there's a lot of like philosophies, and it seems like even now there's a lot of work happening in this idea of treating the client and the server as one. And mm-hmm. it feels kind of like, from what I've heard, that this is a lot of like the philosophy that that you're working towards, is how do we get that handoff to be a little bit more seamless? Like, I don't want to have to think about, like, you know, hydration or getting the data in a certain way on the client or the server, and then doing all that kind of stuff. I just want it to be solved for me. Like, do you feel like that's kind of the space that frameworks in this like React space are needing to go toward?
Yeah, it's a huge question, right? I think it's a hard nut to crack. Some frameworks like Create React App just decided, you know what, we're not even gonna mess with the server.
Yeah.
We're not gonna mess with the server rendering pages. And a lot of React Router users, you know, React Router is built for single page apps. You know, the history library, everything we talked about last time I was on the podcast, all of that stuff happens on the client, and we have an API in React Router for rendering server side apps with React Router. But the truth is that that's really just the tip of the iceberg. You know, yeah, you can render your routes on the server, but you know, what about all that data? And then once your app grows large, well, how are you doing code splitting with all of the different routes you have? You know, are you including all of those in your initial bundle, or are you able to, you know, progressively sort of load them as the user navigates around the app? Same thing with, you know, the bundles that you're generating. So I think the reason that it's so hot right now is because now we've all got kind of a couple of years worth of experience with React.
Yeah.
And we're kind of looking around saying, okay, you know, Facebook will kind of talk about, you know, at ReactConf, they'll kind of talk about some of the things that they're doing. But really, the open source pieces are GraphQL, React, Metro. But there's not a really sort of cohesive piece that kind of puts it all together for you, unless you are using one of the frameworks that's out there, right? Like Next or Gatsby or something like that. And then all of the framework creators' opinions come into play, you know, whatever they think is the most important thing to focus on.
I think that's actually a really good definition of Remix too. Is it's you go to Facebook's React conference, they talk about all the cool things that they do with React and data loading and all that kind of stuff, and then you go home and you're like, well, I want to play too.
yeah. Where's my big pipe?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Remix is sort of like the Facebook infrastructure for the rest of us.
Fetch as you render, as you fetch, as you route.
I doubt that you're going to be able to copyright that, but so what are some of the pieces then that are missing? Or I guess some of the pieces that need to be figured out in order to create a framework. So things that are kind of shared, I guess, even in with the libraries that already exist. Like, so you need some kind of routing, right? And then like what else?
Yeah, so, and you said something a little bit earlier where you were saying that these frameworks are kind of like trying to treat the server and the client as one, like kind mm-hmm. of it's the same world. Just as we've been developing Remix, what's kind of interesting is we actually are drawing way more inspiration from Rails, probably, than Next or Gatsby or Create React App or anything that we've done in React before. And if you've done Rails, then you know about a thing called TurboLinks.
Yes.
And TurboLinks is the Rails version of let's treat the client and the server as one. So if you're unfamiliar with it, TurboLinks basically allows you to build all your pages with Ruby and Rails, and it'll deliver those pages. And then when the user clicks a link, you don't have to like do any JavaScript to go and get the new page and load the data or any of that kind of stuff. Rails is just going to go to its server and have Ruby render the new page for you. And then you're going to get that new page as XML or HTML. And then they've got some JavaScript built into TurboLinks that just like, you can think of it like the virtual DOM diff of React,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Or it really just document.body inner HTML, yeah. Kaboom. Yeah.
But, just nukes it.
Yeah, but that's still like, that's the... To me, that's the right model. Like, I don't want to have to think And this is what you run into with the current frameworks that server render React, is you got to think, I'm loading data. Am I loading this from the browser? Or am I loading this from the server? If I'm on the server, I would rather just like go straight to the database and get that data. If I'm on the client, well, then all I have is fetch and maybe mix with some other sort of thing. So there's this like, you can almost get there, but if you try to do your data fetching the same and with like the same code in both places, yeah, it gets really difficult. And so one of the missing pieces, to get at your question, is data. How do you get your data into the page when you initially render? And how do you get data into the page when you click on a link? Mm-hmm. And should you just go ahead and do a full page reload and do it the same every time? So that's a big nut to crack, is data for both the initial render and then also for the transitions between routes.
Well, it's really interesting that you bring up Turbo Links, because I've always thought that this was a really fascinating technology in Rails, right? And it, I don't know, at the time it kind of felt like a little bit weird, or like even PJAX, right? I feel like that's what
PJAX
GitHub used.
I haven't heard that forever. Like,
so there's like Turbo Links and PJAX, and they were pretty aggressive.
We might as well be saying like COBOL right now to a lot of web developers.
I know. Like, people are like,
they didn't, I've heard of Rails.
Yeah. They didn't teach you that in code
school. Basically, like, all it did was it would hijack all your links, right? And it would turn like your regular anchors into like, it would fetch and then like you said, just replace the body, but leave all the CSS and JavaScript kind of already processed.
Mm-hmm. And because that's what you save. Then you don't have to re-download that JavaScript, or even if it's cached, your browser still makes a request to say, "Hey, do I still need this?" And then it comes back with a 303, like, "No, it's unchanged.
You got it. You're good."
Yeah.
And so, like, I love this idea, but it seems like paired with what Rails has done from the very beginning, right? Like, if you look at that first, like, 2013, I said Rails, React keynote, like, one of the big things that they talk about is this concept of, like, hydration, right? Like, that you can render React, like, on the server and then, like, kind of, like, write over it just as easily as if you had, like, rendered it on the client for the first time. And so it feels like there's definitely something there, right? Because like React is almost like a really good Turbo Links, right? Like you said, just kind of picking out and like replacing the pieces that would need to be changed instead of doing the whole like, you know, replace the document body.
Yeah, and see, and that's where you like get dropped off at a cliff with React is like, oh, but what about the data I just loaded on my server? Right? And like that's the thing. And so it's like, okay, well, just don't send it. Okay, well, now I've rendered like maybe a nav, maybe.
Just render a spinner, and then in your use effect or your componented mount or whatever, you'll go and fetch.
Yeah, so at that point, what is the point of even server rendering the thing? If all you could have just dumped a shell in your index HTML thing and then replace the thing when React shows up. Yeah.
One other thing that you said, Michael, was you talked about, I think it was Ryan said, we're drawing a lot of inspiration from Rails. I would like to say that, you know, we're drawing a lot of inspiration from PHP as well. I feel like I really do. Like, you know, there was a lot of stuff that like the file name based routing, like for example, right? The first time I ever did that was, I was using a PHP framework called CodeIgniter. And then I used Zend.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah, and then I used Zend framework, and they did kind of a similar thing. And it was it was so nice with my little Apache server, because I would just name a file something, you know, profile.php or whatever, and now I would have a profile page that I could punch in the URL and I could browse to that page. So, you know, there are a lot of kind of old ideas here, and I feel like we kind of leapt forward by a lot when React came on the scene, because we finally learned how to manage state and the UI in a stateful way and suck the state out of the UI. And it was so nice that everybody just wanted to build stuff with React, but it took a while for us to kind of merge the two worlds, if you will, because there was so much good stuff.
Yeah, it's easy to look at like where we're at with React and be like, oh, we forgot all the great things about the web, and this is ridiculous, and like, and look how hard it is to try to do what we used to do in PHP in React. Like, this is ridiculous. But like, go back then, and I was building super interactive applications with JavaScript back then too, and that part was dang hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So React has made this part super easy. But it has its own trade-off. But to try to like do the kind of interactions that we can do now with React, like in 10 minutes, would have taken a month of development time to have the same runtime performance that React has. Like when you're goofing around with elements all yourself, not for like a small animation or a little form validation, but like some of the really robust kinds of interactions that you can get, that part is way easier now in React. So it's like the back end piece was a lot easier before React showed up, but the front end piece was really difficult. React shows up and we really wanted to build these nice dynamic apps. And so React made that easy. But now the back end piece and the data and the server render and all that is really difficult. And so now, you know, 5 years later, to me, it's like, okay, it's not that we were doing dumb things in Rails. Rails is awesome. We weren't doing dumb things in CodeIgniter and PHP. That stuff, that was all good stuff. We just now know what our constraints are for this new front end stuff too, and let's bring these two worlds together. And that's what I feel like Michael and I are trying to do with Remix.
Yeah. I love that we've now just turned everyone off to this show. We went all the way down to PHP. Like nobody's listening anymore.
This was the React podcast.
Old
screw
guys
this.
Talking about the way software used to be. So.
Remix is also a couple of other, so like that's kind of like, I feel like getting to a lot of the meat of it. There are also a lot of other kind of nice things that we're kind of throwing in there. Like, so a couple of weeks ago in our newsletter, Ryan demoed this scroll management piece, and it's something that you should be doing. It's something that every web app should be doing. And it's something that typically in React Router land, we have said, this is how we would expect you to do it. Right? Like, we're going to give you this hammer and this saw, and we're going to give you these tools. One of them is the location key, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to give you this tool here, and you can use that to manage the scroll position in a nice way. You know, you can save it to session storage and restore it when the user gets back to that page and everything. And part of Remix is, you know, we're kind of looking around and like, you know what? Like, we're not 100% sure that this is really catching on, and we think that we could actually do a lot more for people. Instead of telling them how to do it, like, why don't we just give them a hook, right? And we can't do that, though, unless we own more of the stack, right? We can't do that unless we know, you know, we have a lot of other opinions about, okay, here's how you're going to build your web app. And so just stuff like that that we're including in Remix that is, I feel like, kind of it gives us the opportunity to, instead of just saying, here's how you can do this, to just say, here's a hook. We did it for you.
Yeah, because like with scroll position in particular, at a high level, it's super easy to understand. The user clicks back, the location changes. If the location's different, then put the scroll position back to where it was. So why doesn't React Router just ship with something like that? Well, if you click back and you don't have a data cache to be able to render the page the way it looked last time the user was looking at it, then React Router can't restore the scroll position for you because it doesn't know when your data is there or if it's going to be there.
Right.
And so it doesn't know when to do it. So with Remix, we actually have a data cache. So when you click the back button, we know now, because we designed the cache, that your whole page is going to look exactly the way that it looked last time that the user was there. And so now we can safely restore the scroll position. But if you're just using React Router and create React app and you don't have a data cache and you click the back button, it's probably going to be a spinner at the top and there is no overflow scroll on the body. And so we have nowhere to, there's nothing for us to do.
Yeah. Another really great example. Sorry, before we move on, I know you've got a ton of questions, Michael, but another really great example of this is like, our integration on the back end with various backends, right? So before we could say, here's how you render a React Router app if your server is an Express server, right? Here's how you do it. Here's a doc page on how you do it, right? But now with Remix, what we can say is, you know what? Here's a Remix run express package. Just go ahead and drop that in, and that's going to take care of doing all the server rendering for you. You know, or like here's an express middleware, for example, right? Oh, or if you're deploying to Lambda, well, here's a you know, an adapter for deploying a Remix app on AWS Lambda. So, you know, it really gives us the opportunity to get out of that place where, you know, we're just like advising you on how to do it and say, here, go do it. And to just say, here, we're going to take on this responsibility. We're going to have opinions about it and we're going to do it for you. And we're going to manage your data loading. And so we can do all this other stuff for you. We can help you a lot more.
Yeah.
Focus management, scroll position, data caching. There's just so much we can do when we own.
Yeah.
More deploying redirects and, you know, refreshing and managing transitions between pages and things. There's just so much.
404 status codes, 301 redirects.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to dive into some of the more like technical pieces and like how it connects to backends. But I want to clarify something that I think is important. And Ryan, you and I have talked about this a little bit, but something that's so important about really marrying the front end and the back end experience in this way is, you know, you talk about being able to like manage focus, focus when you go back and you're navigating around your app, which is super important. But there's also this accessibility piece to all of this, right? Where, you know, because we have moved so much into like dynamic applications, there's so much that we can do by keeping all of that information on the page and like not making people have to like re-navigate an entirely new page just because one thing, like a comment changed, right? Or, you know, now a menu is open or whatever. Having these like dynamic things on the client is super important for a lot of experiences that aren't just kind of like, oh, I clicked this thing and now like, for people who don't have like the visual experience of the web, who can like really quickly see these things changed, and having that dynamic web and like solving these problems is really more than just like, what is it? It's more than just like, hey, you could have like just done this as HTML, right? Because like those things like alerts and these things that happen that are like these toast menus, these things are really valuable and they didn't really exist in a really good way before.
Yeah.
I guess that's like, it's in response to like, I just want to talk for a minute about kind of that notion that you brought up of like people saying like, oh, well, you know, we solved this in Rails like, you know, 10 years ago with, you know, with Turbo Links. But not really. And I know that, you know, as someone who has been kind of at the forefront of accessible components in React and like really driving that through, like not just in a theoretical way, but like in practice with components, like how do you feel about like kind of like that mentality, like when we've come so far in the other direction to actually provide really great experiences for more users?
Yeah, so for example, if you're using, one of the most common things to do, and this is what Turbo Links does, well, I don't know if it's Turbo Links, but I know that Basecamp does it as I've kind of goofed around in Basecamp. I've looked at the code in Next.js, and I've attempted to solve this in ReachRouter a couple of years ago and couldn't because I didn't own enough of the stack. But this focus management idea in your routes, what Next.js does and what Basecamp, which I assume is probably TurboLinks, is when you navigate somewhere, again, the whole point is to like avoid a whole bunch of requests to the server, right? We don't want to reload the whole page because we don't want to parse all that JavaScript again, just all this junk. It's really nice to just change what the user's already looking at. So what they'll do is they'll just move the focus to the body. They'll just, whatever, if something was focused and now it's not anymore, someone clicked a link. Okay, just move the focus up to the very top of the page. And if you're using an assistive device like a screen reader, it doesn't like nothing happens. You right. don't hear anything. There's not a noise. There's not text. You just kind of sit there, and you can hit like a keystroke to like basically like a who am I, like where am I, and then it'll be like, you're currently on the document, blah 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 blah, and now they got to navigate through the whole page again, which most of the time you'll have a skip links at the top of the page and then it can jump you down to the main nav, but even then the main nav is not really where you want. Well, sorry, it'll jump you to the content, but like most UI is nested. And this is the big idea that we got from Ember with React Router years ago, is that most UI is nested. You have these layouts inside of layouts inside of layouts. Most apps go three levels deep, sometimes four or five. Top nav, left nav, center.
Yep.
And then even in the center, sometimes you have another left nav or something like that. So with moving a lot of our code to the client, or at least thinking about our apps as like a client-side app instead of just a big document, when you click a link, and with React Router and Remix, we can know, hey, well, it's only this layout that changes. We don't need to worry about the top nav or the left nav or the second left nav. We know that it's just this little, it's the user profile that you're looking at. Maybe you got a list of users on the left, global nav at the top, click a user, and now you're looking at that user. We can know that's the only piece of the page that changed. So let's go move focus inside of there's various ways to do it. Marcy Sutton has done a lot of research on this. And one of the best ways to do it is kind of have like a skip nav inside of there, and maybe like a little maybe a little nav section that's like has a couple of links, like go back to where you were, or go down to the content of where we're at.
Yeah.
So you click a link for the user, you get moved to this like little mini nav thing that's like, hey, go back, or like, or here's the page you're on, here, click this to now go read it. And you just can't do that with the old tech, without JavaScript in the front end doing stuff. Like you can't make that experience really great. Now some people might be like, oh well, you don't really need to optimize that. People using screen readers are good at navigating a page. But to me, I'm like, but I can. Like we could make this experience. It's kind of hard right now, but we can do it. And to me, that's a worthwhile goal to be able to move them around the page. Without them having to screw around trying to find what changed.
Yeah. Well, and this is one of the areas where mobile devices, you know, if you're using the default elements, you know, from Apple's like library or even like Android's library, like this experience is a lot better on those platforms. And it's kind of one of those areas where it's like the web shouldn't be crappier just because like we use older technologies, right? Like if we can make it better, it'd be nice if we could make it more dynamic and have those experiences have that same level of like comfort for all users. Then they do, you know, by default with just like sending HTML down the wire every time.
Yeah. I was actually just thinking about Suspense earlier today in that same vein, you know, Suspense itself seems kind of gratuitous, I'm sure, to a lot of people who are like, yeah, whatever, the image loaded and then the page kind of, the layout changed. Who cares? It's the web. It's janky. Like we're used to it. It's fine, you know? But just because that's the way things are doesn't mean...
We only had 8 different layout shifts. That's not a big deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was describing situation to a friend of mine the other day, and I was like, you know how the web is kind of janky? And she's like, you know, you're right. It is, you know, like that's the thing. And she's not a developer, but you know, and she's like, you know, and I was like, yeah, that's why mobile apps, like they're so much faster because you download these, you know, 50 meg bundles, you know, when you install the app and then everything's installed. So like they don't do requests and anyway.
Well, and those 50 meg bundles sit on top of, you know, whatever UI and
yeah, exactly.
It's
already built into
the already.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, anyway, just, To go back to your point, Ryan, and the point that you were making too, Michael, is just because we've always, just because it's always been that way, doesn't mean it always has to be that way, right? We can do a lot better.
And there's stuff in Remix that like we couldn't have done without Suspense. Like after goofing around for a little while, I was like, okay, I know how to do this now.
Yeah.
I really feel like I don't know. There's been some kind of sentiment in the React community lately, and Sunil, who is a man that I love and respect and admire, and I was in the room when you did the podcast with him last year, Michael, at ReactConf, kind of expressed the sentiment that I've felt as well, and that Ryan has expressed to me as well, which is like, oh, like I'm just not as excited as I used to be about it. You know, like why haven't we gone further? Why haven't we gone further than we are now? And I mean, how long have they been talking about Suspense now? For over Has it been
two
over
and a half years, I think?
Yeah, it's been a while, right?
I mean, and we got hints of it. They were starting to work on it when we built React Router V4, which is like forever ago.
But the truth is, it takes time. For this stuff to pan out, you know, it takes time. But I really feel like suspense is a significant enough shift away from how we've been doing things before. Like Ryan said, we couldn't have done. We Remix really wouldn't even be that exciting, you know, without it. So I really feel like it's like a new React. It's like a React V, like Hooks was like V2 and Suspense is like V3. it really is going to change things. It's going to change the way we think about how we write our apps and just make these nice experiences. I can't wait until it's polished and enough to, you know, for real people to start shipping it in real apps and taking advantage of it instead of being like this experimental thing.
And a lot of it gets abstracted away in Remix too. So it's not like you're going to be like goofing around with suspense all the time in Remix. Yeah. It's like, we use it to implement all this great stuff. Now you just get to say what your app should be, where your data comes from, and like,
you just get the benefit from it. You're going to have a link and you're going to say, you know what, when I click on this link, I'm willing to wait, you know, 500 milliseconds for the new stuff to resolve before we start the transition. You know what I mean? Having that kind of an API at that level, that's the right spot where you want to meet the developer and say, hey, you want to offer a little bit nicer experience to your user here because you know that it's going to take some time to fetch the data or whatever, or for the preload function for that route. Mm-hmm. Like if you can meet them right there, then that's the point where it becomes easy for the developer to create a much cooler experience than they would have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember we talked about this a little bit in our episode, Michael. I think it was 85, maybe. So it was like about 10 weeks ago. And where we talked about how you were really starting to come around to the language that Facebook's been using of realizing, like in React Router, we actually are able to let people use suspense without having to personally use suspense. Like as the React Router author, I'm able to like provide a better experience, use these APIs, and not have to expose really anything to them. What does it look like to expose those configuration options to people? Like how long they're willing to wait for certain transitions and whatnot in Remix?
Well, that specific question is rough.
Yeah, well, we're still working it out. But like one of the things, you know, that I just mentioned was like, you know, a link, right? You might. And I don't know what the exact API is, right? But you've got a link to a page which indicates, okay, they can click here and they can navigate. Or you've got our navigate function. In V6, we've got this hook called use navigate. And that's how you can programmatically navigate when somebody submits a form or something like that. And you can say, for example, you know, how long you're willing to wait for that navigation. Or you can just, you know, configure it up top and say, you know, globally, we're willing to wait, you know, in general, we're willing to wait up to 3 seconds for data to load or whatever before we actually start transitioning. There's another hook in V6 that we've got called use location pending, right? So imagine the timeout, the timeout's over, we've transitioned to the new page. You can use that hook to say, you know, are we still waiting for the location to change? Like, are we still waiting for the data to load? Yes. Okay. Well, then we can, you know, show a spinner, right? So instead of having these like, you know, the view that's showing the spinner shouldn't really care, you know, about like the data, the loading state, the specific state that you're loading from the server. All it cares about is, you know, all it needs is like this Boolean, like should I show the spinner or not, basically. And so we've got a couple of places for you to hook in there. And so, you know, you can throw in a suspense fallback component anywhere you want, or you can use this hook anywhere you want to, you know, decide to, you know, whether or not you're going to show some loading indicators. But it's not like you're going to have to be the one who's going to say, you know, use transition, you know, start transition, right? That's not your job. We can build that into the router and we can build that into Remix for you.
Yeah. So I want to add to that a little bit. Yeah. Imagine this kind of user workflow, right? I'm looking at a list And it's one of those master details. The list's on the left, the content is on the right. And you click on a user. We might want to wait 2 seconds, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe we want to wait 5 seconds for that data. And if, but you don't want to just sit there with like a silent, non-responsive app for those 5 seconds on the old screen. Like if I click on that user, I want some feedback that the app is thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so like Michael was talking about with the use location pending, I can now say, okay, in my user list, the link that you just clicked, I want to show a spinner inside of that link, not the whole page, but just inside sure. that link I clicked, just to, like indicate like, hey, I'm thinking about this. And maybe I'll just use CSS to delay that by like 500 milliseconds.
Mm-hmm.
So I click the user link, 500 milliseconds go by. Now I get a little spinner just on the user link, but I'm still mm-hmm. looking at the general page I was looking at before. Now I get, now I can kind of hang out for, if it's been 2 seconds and all the data loads, then boom, it transitions to the new screen. But if it's been 5 seconds, which Michael was talking about, we can like put on the link, like link, wait 5,000 milliseconds or whatever the API sure. ends up being. Now, instead of just a little spinner on our link, we get like a big spinner for the whole app. Or maybe there are two routes. We got like some nested routes here. And so what we're going to do is we're going to say, well, you know what? We already have some data for the page, and maybe it's the majority of the data, but maybe it's just the comments on this user profile or something that we don't have yet.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense to transition to that page and show the main content while we throw a spinner up on the next page for the data we're waiting for. So it's basically like saying, hey, wait 5,000 milliseconds for everything.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's been 5,000 and we've got some stuff, let's show what we've got right now.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're not necessarily opting people out of using those APIs, but you're making it so that like this framework's making it so that you don't have to think about them. You can kind of just like run and gun, build your application, and then maybe like fine tune those experiences as you need them a little bit later.
Yeah, with the suspense component, the suspense list component, you'll use those. You'll use location pending, so that's how you mm-hmm. know to put the spinner up on the link.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to tell you like, hey, we are transitioning, but we haven't yet. And so now you can put spinners wherever mm-hmm. you want. And then the rest is just normal, the suspense component stuff and the composition there. But what's cool is that we have these nested routes. And so that allows you to control more where spinners go up. You could just have one big spinner on the whole app, or you can say, you know what, for this layout or this layout, let's put a spinner here. So you could see the main profile maybe while we're fetching the list, a spinner goes up. Or maybe the list will show up, but then we got a spinner on the profile because those are nested routes.
Yeah. That sounds great. I always get really frustrated when people feel like they have to reinvent the world, right? Because you're building this framework, there may be like a little bit of like a pull to like own the whole problem, like own all of the language, right? But I appreciate when framework authors have the restraint to let things that are good enough just be the thing that's used and like allow like Googleability of that thing, right? Like you can now have like the whole world as like a resource for like how to like kind of move your suspense and error boundaries around to like make the UI exactly how you want it to be instead of just what you've written.
Yeah, and that's why we couldn't have done this without suspense. That's why we're so excited about it. You mix suspense and the fallbacks with suspense, with the composition, with nested routes, and then that use location pending thing. All those pieces together are going to allow us to create really great loading experiences.
Yeah. Now, Michael, I wanted to go back to something that you had started talking about, but I kind of cut you off to finish off this part of it. I want to talk about the backends, and I feel like you're like such a good person to really like be thinking about this because you've spent is it 4 years now on Unpackage?
I think we're closing in on
four. Six? No. Has it been that long?
No.
Sorry. We're coming up on five. We're coming up on five. It was November 2015. We're coming up on five.
Oh my gosh. Time is going too fast. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm really kind of curious, like from your perspective, like what you've been infusing from what you've learned from Unpackage to really build out the kind of like back end connection pieces of Remix. You mentioned kind of having these pre-configured ways to build for platforms, you know, whether it's like a Lambda or, you know, Google Cloud Functions, etc.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So there's one thing that I've been kind of snarky about it, honestly.
I knew you were going to go here.
on Twitter. I've been kind of snarky about it. And I, thing is, I'm really not that snarky of a person. Like, I'm just, I'm a nice guy. So I just want people listening to the podcast to know that I'm, you know, I'm not that snarky, really. But we need to talk about HTTP caching. Because there is, like, there is some weird stuff going around. And I'm like, I thought here we were. I thought this was a solved problem. Like, you know, HTTP as a protocol is, it's a stateless protocol. And so, you know, you don't have these, you know, live open connections to servers all the time. Of course, you have WebSockets now, but, you know, typically you make the request, you get the response, that's it. And so, you know, we've gotten good. I mean, it's 30 years old now, more than that. You know, we've gotten good at having, you know, proxies for HTTP and caching servers, you know, middle servers and CDNs that manage caching, right? And so there's some pretty, and that's what helps make things really, really fast, right? So even if you have an origin server that's located in Des Moines, Iowa, you know, somebody browsing your site in, you know, Jakarta can actually load your site pretty quickly because you put your origin server behind a CDN like Cloudflare or something, and they have, they have 166 data centers all over the world, right? And it's something that we've been doing for years now, right? Akamai, CloudFront from Amazon, Cloudflare, obviously, they're Fastly. There are lots and lots of different CDNs, and anybody who's building a large website, enterprise scale website, is familiar with this and is using this technique to optimize delivery of their sites around the world. And so that's something that I had to learn, from experience when I was building Unpackage. Unpackage, for anybody who's not familiar, is a reverse proxy for files that are on NPM. So anything that somebody publishes to NPM, you can get it over HTTP. And that's basically it. And when I first started Unpackage, it was a Heroku app. You know, it's just this app running on Heroku and who knows where, data center, on a dyno, whatever that is.
Isn't that a new TypeScript?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, right. Dino, dyno. Oh, I don't know. That's Dino, I mix them up. Dino. I don't know. So anyways, this is this little app running on this little dyno somewhere and it's serving, you know, millions of people all over the world. Well, how's it doing that? Gee, I wonder. It's sitting behind a CDN, right? And it issues these really aggressive caching headers. So, for example, you know, if you request React 16.8.0/index.js, we can, you know, Unpackage can know, okay, that file is pretty much never going to change because once you publish a package to NPM, the contents of that package never change. You can't overwrite a previously published version for obvious reasons. And so we're just going to say that file is good to be cached for a year or more. Never going to, you know, if once you get this file, you can keep it for as long as you want.
And a year is the limit, right, with HTTP caching. That's why.
Yeah.
It's the only way to say forever.
And so it gets, you know, cached in data centers all over the world. And then pretty soon requests for that asset stop hitting the origin server. They just stop. They just don't hit the origin server anymore because they're cached in all the data centers around the world. And so so I've worked on this for quite a while in Unpackage. Unpackage actually has a 99%+ cache hit rate. That means, obviously, the vast majority of the time that you're hitting Unpackage for a file, you are getting it from one of the 166 data centers spread out around the world, right? And so there's... You know, so HTTP caching, it works well. And there's been kind of like this movement, I feel like, even among people who are like very, very with it in the web community to say everything needs to be static, right? Everything must be static. Everything must be HTML, CSS, JavaScript, static, pre-generate as much as you can. And that's nice and that's good, but you lose the ability then to vary the response based on who's doing the requesting, right? So, you know, again, anybody who's building large websites nowadays has a login has a user login, and those users have different things that they can see based on who they are, different permissions. Sure. And so if you're pre-generating this HTML page, and you're supposed to serve that exact same HTML page to, you know, hundreds, potentially thousands, hundreds of thousands of different users, you can't really include any unique identifying information in that HTML page. And excuse me for explaining it like you're all five, but this is basic stuff, right? This is basic HTTP HTML stuff. So what you end up doing is in the pre-generation of that HTML page, you can't include any personally identifying information. And so it ends up being kind of more or less like what we were talking about earlier, like a shell. Maybe you've got like the nav in there, or you've got like your footer or whatever. Yeah.
It's just a template, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a template, just an HTML document that's not really useful. And then so you can pre-generate that, but then anything that's actually useful for that user when they load that HTML page, they're going to have to load that in another request, mm-hmm. right? And so it's this, you know, this kind of like back and forth right now, I feel like in the React framework space between static site generators and sites that are full on server rendered. Mm-hmm. And Ryan and I are kind of the opinion that, you know, as long as you've got your app behind a CDN anyway, you can just server render the thing, which means you get all the flexibility of a server rendered app, right? You don't have to like jump through the holes or jump through the hoops that you have to in order to try and pre-generate things. Mm-hmm. So your build time is zero. You have to build to build your bundles, but like you're not like pre-generating a whole bunch of HTML pages. So it's a lot lower, right? We don't need a server farm to like build your, you know, hundreds of thousands of static HTML pages. And you increase your flexibility and you're not slow because you set the right caching headers and your page serves just as quickly. I mean, the truth is, even if you are using a static site generator, you're putting it behind a CDN like CloudFront or Cloudflare or whatever. So as far as your statically generated app, which has a shell of an HTML file, and my statically or my server rendered app that has a full on HTML file with a vary header that's based on, you know, that user ID, that session ID. You know, what that means is I can serve a full HTML page, and the only time I suffer any sort of penalty is on the very first request when I go back to the origin server to actually generate the HTML page. Every other request is just as fast, right? Assuming we're both using the same CDN, and we're not, you know, forcing the user to make additional requests for the data once the page loads. And so this is actually one of the kind of really cool things that we're doing with Remix is we've talked about server rendering. Remix will actually server render your app in development too, which is kind of a tricky thing to do. So it'll server render it in production, but it'll server render it in development too, so that you can see at any point when you're developing in Remix, you can click the refresh button and you can see exactly what the server will send to the browser if the user was to land on that specific page, and the whole thing is going to be server rendered. So we're pretty confident that this is the way to go, just because of all the experience that we've had with, you know, serving large scale server rendered apps. I mean, it's a model that's been around. Like I said, kind of at the beginning, like we're taking ideas from Rails, we're taking ideas from PHP. These are not new ideas. You know, the ideas behind HTTP caching are not new ideas, and they're very, very robust. And they've, you know, it's what we've built on up to this point. So we're very confident that we can get, you know, really great performance out of these Remix apps, but then also preserve the flexibility that you get when you need to do things, you know, at runtime, because you need session data in order to generate the page.
And so what this means in like a practical perspective, like a like an example. Imagine instead of having 3,000 markdown files, that when you go to publish your website, you've got to build the HTML for all 3,000 mm-hmm. of those markdown files. And if you have a successful content site, you're a newspaper or something, you're going to have a lot of, yeah. of data. And so instead of having all those markdown files, you got to build all of them in order to ship the page. Imagine all that markdown just lives in a database, you know, like WordPress.
These are revolutionary ideas here.
It doesn't need to be code or a file. It can live in a database.
Yeah.
And so now you don't have to deploy your whole website in order to add a new page. All you have to do is add a record to your database. Mm-hmm. And then when someone hits that URL, I mean, again, this is like, I'm explaining this like it's this cool, amazing idea, but this is how websites work. And like, this is how the web has always worked. Yeah. Someone hits the URL, Remix has these loaders that only run on the server. It's going to go to your database. You get to do this part yourself. Go to your database, pull down your markdown, bring in Remark or whatever you want to use mm-hmm. in Node. Convert the thing to HTML, send that HTML down to the React app, and then set the inner HTML of a div, and now you've got your markdown post. Yep. And then mix that with what Michael's talking about. And if it's all static, there it doesn't vary on the user ID.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't install any plugins to do that either, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There was no like Remix, whatever Firebase plug, like, you know.
Yeah, you get to just copy and paste this markdown, or you could just use GitHub's markdown API and send the markdown to them, and they'll give you a response
yeah.
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so you just send that text down, and now if it's truly static, you don't have a vary header, and mm-hmm. so the CDN, after the first person goes to that page, and that could be you, right? You just published it, now you go hit reload before you tweet it out.
Yeah.
Now the thing is cached. You don't redeploy your website. You don't go through a build. You don't do any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your function gets called one time, and then it's cached through HTTP. The very same. If it was a flat file behind the cache, or it was something that got generated from an HTTP request in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone else who gets it from the cache, it's the same.
Well, I'm kind of curious. So where does this put like headless CMSs, right? Because there's this whole move right now, kind of. To create backends for things like, you know, Next and Gatsby and whatnot. And the whole thing is like you put your content up there and then, you know, there's some type of webhook that like when you put a new post, now it's going to rebuild your entire site and like redeploy it and whatnot. Like, is there still like room for that? Or are we going to like move back to like now you put all your stuff in like Postgres?
You either cache it to a file and then put it on a mm-hmm. CDN, or you generate it once on your server and put it on a CDN. But I want to actually take a step back and say,
yeah,
this is not our target market with Remix either. This is just us talking about how it works.
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah.
We want people to build with Remix. I'm sure they can build something like this. You could totally yeah. have a CMS backend and you just talk to the database in your loaders and Remix and generate whatever markup.
Generate your blog or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And that, like that will work. And it yeah. will be great in Remix.
Yeah.
But really what we're thinking more about is the kinds of stuff that we built throughout our careers in web yeah. development.
Yeah.
I worked on a learning management system. It was a Rails app. You do rake routes. There were 2,500 routes. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of UI. Everything was behind login pretty much. Some stuff was public, but if you were logged in, it was a little bit different. Lots of admin panels, dashboards, lots of user generated content. That's what we're thinking about. We're not yeah. thinking about making a blog or a newspaper website.
Right.
We are thinking about building a Zillow or a learning management or sure. a Netflix
or a Twitter.com or
Facebook or a Twitter.
Yeah. Which is yeah. where I worked.
A sports team management, a little league admin panel, so parents can log in and see when the kids'
totally.
Game is. And
totally. Like,
you know,
totally.
It's that kind of stuff. And we want to have all those benefits of server rendering and yep. caching and yep. all that kind of stuff. But we're not worrying so much about the static generation stuff.
Of course,
thinking about the apps that we've built.
So that brings up an interesting point. So I know that in React Router V6, you've done a ton of work to really like double down on the dynamism of React Router. And you've added some APIs to be able to like leverage the file system to kind of build your architect your application, right? Can you tell me about how those things are kind of coming together to like inform Remix and inform the way that you'll build applications with Remix?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry if I feel like I jumped in front of Ryan.
No, go. I finished. It's your turn. Tag.
Oh, it's my turn. Tag. Ding. One of the things that we talked about last time, so we've talked about a lot of, about file system routing. I just wanted to make it clear that like that's like we have a programmatic way to do routing as well, right? So if you don't like the file system thing, no big deal. You can build your routes with a function.
Yeah, it looks pretty much like an Ember route config. We kind of borrowed from
very
there.
Similar.
Know, actually, a 5-year-old Ember route config, maybe it's different now.
May have changed. For example, one of the things that React Router does, and one of the features in V6 that's really, really cool is this automatic route ranking algorithm, right? So one of the big problems with V4 and V5 in React Router is if you put your routes in the wrong order, then some routes are unreachable. And we talked about that in the last podcast that we did, and it'll be familiar with anybody who's used V4 and V5. And it's, you know, you have exact control using the switch component over which order your routes are in, but it really is just dumb, kind of like a switch statement. It just goes through your routes in order, matches the very first one and renders that, or the first one that matches it renders. The routes component in V6 is actually a lot smarter. So it'll take your routes and it'll actually look at your routes, look at the route tree deeply, right? And it will figure out, okay, based on the current URL, which one of these routes is the best candidate to match the current URL, which takes a ton of intellectual like strain off of the developer, right? They don't have to think as hard about, oh, okay, why isn't my app work? Oh, because I put this one in the wrong order. The router's going to figure it out for them, right? Well,
That's knowable. Like most times people think like, oh, this is like CSS selector specificity and that's a disaster. And it's like, no, this, like we know which one you meant, whichever one's the longest, whichever one's the most static, whichever one has the fewest dynamic segments. Like
we I think we talked about it last time. It's a little bit more like pattern matching, right? Where it's like how many things are specified here? And like, we're going to use the one that like matches the best. Yeah.
So sorry for jumping in there, Michael.
No, not at all. Well, so you talked about, you know, how are the things we're doing in the router influencing Remix? Well, so Remix comes along and says, hey, I want to do file system routing. Well, so on the file system, right, the way that your files are ordered is just by name, right? So you might have a.js and b.js, and no matter, you know, you could try and put an underscore in front of the other one, you know, b to try and get it to sort before a and do and weird hacks like that.
Two underscores and then three underscores.
Right. So you could try and make it the way, you know, just perfectly how you want it. But that would be a huge pain, right? You just want to name the files naturally. But then you also want them to match in a smart way, right? And so we've got syntax in the file name for a dynamic segment. And then we've got dots. We use dots in the file name to indicate, nested URLs. And so we've got this, and this is all just convention, right? For how you name your file. Name your file like this, and we'll nest the routes like this. Well, it turns out that when we're looping over the file system, you know, and we're just generating routes from these file names based on these file names, we don't have to order them, right? It's really cool. We can just loop over the file names, generate a bunch of routes. Here you go, React Router. And React Router is going to say, thank you very much. I know, I've already got the smarts to be able to sort these things and match the right ones.
So you could have like a me.js. So you go to like users/me. We know that one's static. So we're going to put that one above like users/:user ID, right? Like which one did I really mean? I don't want to fetch a user with an ID of me. I want to show the static route of me. And so, yeah, with this ranking algorithm, you can do that kind of thing.
Nice.
Right. So there was that. Another API that made it into V6 is the route preload API, which quite honestly, I don't know how to say this. It's something that I don't think is, well, Suspense is new. And so I think people who are trying to build stuff on top of Suspense are still kind of like working out exactly what these APIs should look like. So we've got this route preload function that is really just, it's really just a function. We don't care about the return value. We don't care about, you know, you're not going to return a promise or anything. We're just, it's just a, it's like a notification that we're going to call on a route. If you have, if a route has a preload function, we're just going to call that when it's time for that route, when we've matched that route, basically. It's like a notification like, hey, congratulations, we are about to render you, right? And so it's the opportunity for that route to preload. That's why it's called preload. So it can go and initiate the fetch for some data and can go ahead and cache it. But we didn't really have, I think, a firm grasp on what that looked like or what that meant until we started building Remix. Because then it was like, okay, so, you know, what's going to happen after the preload? Where does the data go? Well, it goes into the Remix cache. Well, so then how are we going to retrieve it? Well, we can have a thing called use route data, which is a hook that can go and grab the data out of the cache. Oh, okay. So then the preload function really just needs to be called with the current params and the current location, and that's it, right? Right. So, you know, building something higher level on top of React Router actually helped us to understand better the constraints that we were working with, you know?
Sure. And here's what I think is really cool about that. I keep coming back to nested routes, but in React Router, you can have three routes that are all three nested layouts. And so instead of just saying, here's the URL, what's the data for this page? You get three routes that all get to participate in that. They get to say, hey, I'm the user route, I'm the user's route, and I am the home route. And all three of those routes match. And so we call preload on all three of those.
Yep.
And you see sometimes when Facebook gets up and talks about things at conferences with GraphQL, how they have these like these GraphQL fragments that then they like combine all those fragments together and then create like an optimized query that then they send to the database or to their server. And I've always kind of looked at that like, yeah, but how do you know, where do you get all those fragments from?
Yeah.
Like, how do you know which part of the page is going to render?
Well, I'll just ignore that part. We've got the fragment. Let's move on.
and so with nested routes, I mean, most, I said this in one of our newsletters, when you look at data dependencies for a web app, they are almost always coupled to your routes. I'm at this route, what data do I need? I'm at this route, what data do I need? And so since React Router is also coupled to your layouts, we kind of get like a little cheat code. It's like some people when they server render in React, they render over and over and over again and just collect up all the promises. Like, let's render. Okay, which promises do we need? Those ones landed. Okay, keep rendering. Okay, now what do we need? Okay, render, try it again. So you render the thing five times, your whole app five times, and collect all these promises. I think Apollo works this way. Yeah. And then once you've got it all, okay, now we can go. But with nested routes, we get this cheat code where we got to say, you know what? These four routes, these two routes matched, and that's where your data dependency lives anyway. So we kind of know indirectly what's going to render before we even have to render it. And so with Remix and the route preload can do this too, we got to tell you, hey, these three are going to preload. You can optimize whatever data you want here. Yep. And in Remix, what we're going to be doing, it's really cool, is when all of those routes match, we go to Remix to ask for the data. And Remix on the server also knows your routes. And so it can say, okay, well, you just told me you're on this page. You want to go to this next page. And the server's smart enough to say, routes A and B are still matching. So I don't need to send you the data for that. And I don't even need to go fetch it on the server for that. I only need to fetch the data for C and send that down. And that stuff is just going to happen automatically. App code isn't even going to have to think about, like, oh, which routes changed, which ones didn't, what data do I really need to optimize to go fetch? Remix can actually just do that part for you.
Wild. Wild.
One of the things that's so cool about Ryan and I getting the chance to build this together is we've seriously spent 6 years like thinking about building, you know, this router. I just went back actually the other day and I looked at the very first commit on React Router, which I think was May 2014. And it was just Ryan, like, you know, noodling around. He's got like this mix in and like some create class stuff. And I looked at that and I was like, you know, honestly, a lot of the core ideas like haven't even changed.
that code probably looks more like the router is today than
It does actually. Yeah. There was a method on the mix in called outlet. And I was like, oh, look, V6 has an outlet component, you know, like, cause we didn't have context back then. So you needed a mix in, but anyway,
that's very, Ember influenced for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have never been shy about the fact that we ripped off Ember. We have never, tried to conceal that fact.
V4 kind of went away from it, but, V6, we came right back.
I mean, they had some good ideas.
Great. Oh, they totally. Oh, they totally.
Yehuda and Tom will always be like JavaScript and web development and just programmer heroes to me forever. Like super smart guys.
But one of the things I was going to say is it's really cool now that we get the chance, I think, to build Remix, because we've been thinking about this stuff for a very, very long time. And at the heart of building a web app is having a good router. You know, some people will think like, oh, well, routing is really just, you take a look at the URL and you call a function. You know, I think that's what like the router is in like 99% of cases. You know, Express's router works a lot like that. I think even like the router in Reason React works like that. It's really just kind of like a switch case statement, right? But when we start talking about things like this, right, we start talking about the fact that, okay, so when you render a React router app, because the routes are nested, we actually know all the different levels, the components that are going to render on the page. And each of them, by the way, has this associated preload function. So we're able to, just call all of those and render the whole thing in one shot without sort of like re-rendering and re-rendering and re-rendering and guessing and trying gathering all the promises as we go, not knowing, you know, how deep does this UI hierarchy go? Like if you're not a router, you don't know, right? But if you are, then you know exactly which routes matched and which ones didn't, and whether or not you need to send a 404 or a redirect or whatever. So for us, the opportunity to, I think, work on Remix, it's like, it just segues so nicely from what we've been doing for a long time now.
You just reminded me of another cool thing that we can do, knowing all that stuff, is let's say that the server is like, oh, you know what? You got routes A, B, and C. Both B and C are changing, so I'm going to fetch that data. We don't actually have to wait for all of that data on a route transition in the client. So we can actually, we can stream that data from the server. And when, say, routes B and C, those are the two that we're fetching, let's say that C is ready before B. So B is like the layout that's above C. The app developer can use suspense to like put little boundaries around like, okay, here's the nav. And if I'm waiting for route B, after 3 seconds, I don't want like the nav for some reason is a slow response and it always takes forever. But route C, we get that content like really quick.
Yeah.
So we should transition to this quickly. And so when Remix is fetching that data, we can stream down when C is ready, that'll go down and then React can render the main page and then put a spinner up on the nav. So this is that render as you fetch idea.
Yep.
And having these nested routes and then a data abstraction on top with Remix allows us to just do that part for you. You just got to put your suspense boundaries in the right spots.
This has been episode 99 of React Podcast with Michael Jackson, Ryan Florence, and myself, Chantastic. For links, visit reactpodcast.com/99. Thanks to Infinite Red for supporting this show. If you have a project that's gone off the rails and needs expert help, get Infinite Red on your side. They've been designing, building, and shipping apps for 10 years and want to help you through the hardest parts. They have a sweet deal going right now where if you refer a project, you get $750. Pretty sweet. Get expert help today at reactpodcast.infinite.red. If you like this show, there's a fast, free way to demonstrate your support. Leave us a review on iTunes. It's the best way for you to let me know what you think we're doing right and what we can improve. 2 to 3 minutes of your time helps us make the best show we possibly can. As always, links and show notes for all episodes are available at reactpodcast.com. This episode was edited by Mikhail Delport. It was produced by Mikhail Delport and Sarah Jackson at Spec, a network to help you level up in design and development. Check out spec.fm for other shows that are sure to fast track your career. I'm your friend Chantastic. Thanks for listening. We'll be in your ears again next week.